That track is Let It Ride, Miles, Let It Ride. Sounding good, Mr. Alexander, sounding good. That track is appropriately called Aggression. I am delighted in this hour and for the hour to be joined by Jamaican jazz legend Monty Alexander to discuss his new album. His new project is called D-Day. And I know that Mr. Alexander has some great stories to share about Miles Davis, Frank Sinatra, and likely a great deal more, but turn it up for a second, Miles. Monty Alexander, tell me about this track, sir.
Aggression. First of all, greetings to you, Mr. Tavis. What a joy and a pleasure to speak to you today. It's great. Wonderful. Wonderful. So, okay. Aggression. That is a moment on the moment composition, because as I recorded this album, I was trying to tell a story. But first of all, that's the day I was born. Just a few years ago. 80.
June 6th. Yes.
A fateful day in world history. And that's why my name is Montgomery, because back them days, the British colonial folks were in Jamaica, and my parents said, well, we're going to name this boy. And they said, we're going to name him after Montgomery, the general that was at the Allies land in Normandy, you know? So the whole thing was a kind of way, a subtle way to say, war is not the answer, like Haile Selassie said, you know? So I thought of this as I thought about songs of the period. In fact, I played I'll Never Smile Again, Mr. Frank Sinatra's, one of his very first successful songs back in 39. And the album ended up being a sort of an account and a reminder to folks that were of the age and young people that there was this event that took place. And as we look at the world now and all the strife and the disagreements and the violence, it's just one more time human beings seem to lean towards aggression. And aggression is just a piano player's way of saying, you know, bombs bursting in air and all that. Mm. So that's what that's about.
It's an amazing track. It's an amazing track. I love it. I love the entire project. I'm glad we have the hour to talk about the project. And let me return the sentiment. It is an honor, sir, to be in conversation with you. I appreciate your kind words, but I've been looking forward to this hour. I've been checking out the album and just delighted to have an hour with you. And I thank you for your time. Let me start with this. Obviously, when we think about Jamaica, we think of reggae. Everybody thinks about reggae. I wonder if I can put you on the spot and ask you, at the outset of this conversation, to connect Jamaica and jazz for me. Jamaica and jazz.
Indeed, it's an honor and a pleasure, because I literally was there at the dawn of that whole thing that touched the world, because as you know, the Jamaican spirit touched the world in sociologically, politically, spiritually, and thanks to the main exponents of that spirit, Bob Marley, Jimmy Cliff, all these great guys. But I was there before these guys came along. at 14 years old, I was playing in the recording studio for the Originators. There was Mr. Cox and Dodd that had Studio One. I was just 14 years old. I was a terrible student at school. And I used to sneak out of school just to go to the studio and play with my heroes, the older guys that ended up formulating a word called ska, as they tried to describe the rhythm, which was really a hybrid of Louis Jordan's music and R&B, New Orleans, Roscoe Garden blues, and Jamaica Mento, you know? Mm. So jazz men were the guys that put this thing on the map. Of course, with a sharp producer telling the drummer, keep the beat, so and so and so. And the people of Jamaica, when they heard this music, they say, is our music that? We're going to dance on Friday, Saturday night, we're going to play the sound system. So it was all because of this word that's hard to define, jazz, J-A-Z-Z, which I think you know was a derogatory word describing a lower lifestyle, you know, and that's what affixed itself to American people, African music rhythm and the like. So that's what Jamaica is about, and that's where it started. And then, of course, it became popular, and hence the guys coming up with the hit records, and then Rocksteady, and then Dancehall, and not unlike the hip-hop generation where young black guys were trying to express their chagrin through the music, you know? So I could go on and talk forever about jazz, but that's where the best of popular music became of integrity, because those men put their stamp with their musicality, with a higher level of musicality on country western music, on rock and roll, on blues, everything. And that's because of this high art form, which my dear, dear colleague and hero, Ahmad Jamal, said is American classical music. Anyway, I fear I'm talking too much.
You are not talking too much, and I will never shut you up until I get to the top of the hour, and I have no choice. In 50 minutes, we'll both have to shut up in 50 minutes when this program ends, but I ain't going to stop you from talking for the next 50. His name is Monty Alexander. His energy and his genius and his spirit, his soul, is so infectious, and I'm just delighted to have the hour to celebrate his new project. It's called D-Day. As he approaches his 80th campaign on June the 6th, we celebrate the artistic genius in this hour of Monty Alexander.
Smiley continues when we come forward.
June 6th, 2024, will be the 80th birthday of our guest in this hour, Monty Alexander, Jamaican jazz legend. His new project is called D-Day, and this particular track you're listening to is called June 6th. Tell me about this track, Monty.
Obviously, if I remember correctly, because, you know, when I make a recording, I don't go back and listen to it a lot. I just keep moving, you know?
Yeah.
But I think during the 6th, as I was thinking of all the soldiers that had lost their lives on the beaches of Normandy, I just played a blues, a dirge, kind of a slow blues, which is as one laments the sadness of life. And worst of all is when people lose loved ones. And I came up with this, just a dirge, something like what Ray Charles would have played when he's singing, oh, my baby left me, things ain't good no more, that kind of way of playing. And I'm playing this feeling. I play more than music, I play a feeling. Because I never attended music school. I don't know any music in terms of technical. I just was gifted to hear a song and put a little story on it. So anyhow, June the 6th, which is that fateful day with my birth, born in Jamaica that day, is a description of people who have lost their lives on that beach, yeah, on that day.
To what, Monty, do you attribute? I referred to it earlier, and I repeat again, your artistic genius. Here you are at 14, skipping school to go play. You've never studied piano. You never took lessons. Clearly, it is a gift. But to what do you attribute your being so gifted so early?
Plain and simple, Tavis. Here I am coming 80 within just a few weeks. I can only come up with one answer. God. The Creator in heaven bestowed on me some kind of passionate, joyful feeling, which was, of course, augmented when my musical heroes came into my life. And I'm talking in terms of jazz, which is this American art form. His name was Louis Armstrong. I saw Satchmo in Kingston, and this man evidenced incredible joy as he played the trumpet like nobody else could play the trumpet at that time. And it's also when the old Jamaican musicians were playing the calypso songs, naughty, mischievous little songs that our hero, Harry Belafonte, tapped into and made that ever so fortuitous album, Calypso, in 1956. So I saw these musicians that evidenced joy when they made music. Yes, it was a serious approach to having joy. So it's just been one joyful time. I mean, challenges along the way, but it's Creator God that gave me a sense of value, that when I looked at those piano notes, a sense of marvelous delight would come over me. And I just want to play those like they were jelly beans in the candy store. And I'm serious. It's all like a nut guy talking. But that's, to this day, I have that gift. And I can only give thanks to, as I said, the Creator. Factually put.
I'm so glad. I want to come back to this word joy that you mentioned a few times just now. And I come back to it for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that I was very close to Maya Angelou, the great poet, the great Renaissance woman. And I sat with Maya many, many times for book signings. And she had a habit of signing books with the word joy. She'd sign her name. She'd sign her name and write joy in big letters with an exclamation point. I remember many, many years ago, we were friends for 27 years, but the very first time I saw her write that way, the way she turned that pen on that letter, that J, she turned that pen on the letter J, and here comes the OY, and then this big exclamation point. But many people listening right now, if you have a book signed by Maya Angelou, go look at it right now and see if it doesn't say joy on her signature. That was her thing for so many, many years as she signed these books. And so I come to that because you use that word joy, and your fans know when they hear you in this conversation right now, the joy, not the happiness, but the joy, the sublime joy comes through in everything you say. It comes through in your spirit. As I said earlier, it is infectious. You are a favorite on the jazz festival circuit. And when you play, that joy emanates from you on the stage out to the audience. I've seen it more than once myself. What is that joy about, Monty Alexander? Where do you find that? Talk to me about the joy that is at the epicenter of everything you do, sir.
Perhaps like the great lady you mentioned, a fellow West Indian, Maya Angelou, you can't define it.
Yeah.
It's just a mystery. It's a God-given mystery, because if you can define it, then the problem starts. Because sometimes we are all worshiping this idea of explaining. And sometimes you can't even figure it, because to this day, I can't figure it out. I just accept it gratefully and try not to get in my own way, as I've heard one or two other people say that. And I get joy from certain things more than others, but making music and bringing a smile on people's faces, you know, on the album that we're talking about, Didi, I play First of all, you hear "I'll Never Smile Again," which was a sad kind of a song because I'm going to lose you in my life. But at the end of the record, I played Charlie Chaplin's "Smile." Mm-hmm. The first time I heard it was Nat King Cole, my other great hero of music, when he said Charlie sang those words. So joy and smile and certain people who are struggling with life can't quite tap into that incredible gift, because smiling is one step closer to relieving the pain. And humor, you know, when you have humor, music and humor, it can, and sports. That's, by the way, if you don't mind me saying, this is 3 days after "One More Time." My joy is unbridled because Ryan Garcia did it. Boy, that guy did it up in the ring. Look at here. That young boy, he did it kind of like our hero, our great, great hero who I sat with on many occasions, Mr. Muhammad Ali,
oh, yes,
when he fooled Sonny Liston into thinking he was crazy.
Yeah.
Ryan had everybody thinking he was totally crazy, and that was a part of the fight. So he had joy while he was knocking out poor Devin. You know,
yeah,
that's the way I see it. It didn't quite knock him out, but it was just about there. So,
no, I'm laughing because I'll be in the boxing ring this evening. As a matter of fact, I box here in Los Angeles, and I haven't seen my trainer since the fight over the weekend. But I know that when he's wrapping my hands tonight, we'll have a conversation about that. And one of the things I know he's going to say, because I saw it and you saw it, you can't get knocked down with the same punch three times. I mean, at one point, you got to see that left hook coming. I mean, he got knocked down with three left hooks. And so, as you know, Ryan Garcia did it, but because of the way the fight, because of the weight issue, he did not claim that belt. And so that almost demands a rematch. I don't know what a rematch looks like. If you see that, if that left hook keeps coming at you and you keep getting knocked down by the same, knock me down with something else, but not the left hook three times, Monty Alexander.
Lord have mercy. Let me just put this way. It's one of those things hard to put your finger on, because that young man with all that personality, plus he was just born with a howitzer in that left shoulder. And when he throw that thing, it's gonna hurt.
Yeah.
And it got Devin, who is one of our masterful technicians in the
sure,
ring.
Sure.
You know, you have the masterful technicians, and then you have the guys who are the knockout artists. That's part of why we have excitement in this. And by the way, every time I hear you refer to your assistant by the name of Miles, I had the joy and pleasure hanging out with the wonderful Mr. Miles Davis, that incredible character. And he and I went to the fights on several occasions together. Me and Miles went to Madison Square Garden when Ali fought Yvonne Durrell. So anyhow, boxing for me was a big inspiration from I was 12 years old when Sugar Ray Robinson came to do an exhibition in Jamaica. So, and then Ali, all those times in Miami with Ali. And now I see this young man bringing this ever so hard to explain gift called different. What different? He's a different kind of character. And he told all these incredible things, and you kind of scratch your head and say, is he telling the truth? What's that about? Whatever it was he did, it was not unlike Ali just before the Liston fight when he made Liston think he was crazy.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Everybody thought, given his post and everything else, everybody thought Ryan Garcia was crazy. Maybe he was crazy. I'm about to say the same. Get out of my head, Monty Alexander. I'm going to say the same thing. he may have been crazy like a fox, but that left hook was working, and that was crazy to see the way he worked that thing so beautifully. There are two things that come to mind while you're talking just now. The first is your use of the word masterful, and I want to ask you in a moment to talk to me about the masters of your instrument. You've thrown a couple of names out already, but here you are, a kid, and you are a prodigy. You are gifted beyond measure, gifted at an early age, beyond explanation, except to say God, as you said earlier. But I want to just get you to talk to me about some of the masters of your instrument. Before I do that, though, you mentioned Ali, and you mentioned some others. What has been the joy? Here's that word again, joy. What has been the joy for you? What's been the impact on your life of being in company, because you've already mentioned it three or four times, being in company with people who are great, with the great in all different fields of human endeavor, but you've made it clear to me already that you have found something, you've taken something away from being in the company of greats. What is that?
No, this is going to be muddled as I try to answer it, but I guess the great ones, whoever they are, can detect certain greatness in others.
Oh, yeah.
They sense it.
Oh, yeah.
And they say, he is one of us. Mm. Now, in my case, if indeed I have some of this quote-unquote greatness, I also suffer from the complex of not being confident or sure of myself, like the way Muhammad would say, I'm the greatest. You know, when he said that, it gave a guy like me, wait a minute, I want to be like that too. But it was a complex of personality that I did not know how to overcome. And as the years go by, you get more. And the confidence that came to me was when Mr. Sinatra himself kisses me on the cheek, like the Italian guys do, and say, kid, you're doing great, keep swinging. Mm. Or when Miles comes over to me and say, where'd you learn to play that shit? Excuse my French. And then I tell him, and next thing I'm hanging over with him. Or when Oscar Peterson tells his record company to sign me up. I don't even know why, because I didn't try to go to these people to help me out in my adventure. They came to me. So this sounds like a braggart talking, but it is literally true. So that joy can be detected one to another. And it's only if you're on that level of understanding or you're seeking it. In my case, I don't know. It's a big question mark. And maybe our great Maya Angelou had some of these same doubts, because the only way you get to faith, you got to go through doubt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it says starve your doubts, feed your faith. Mm. And I've been feeding my faith like the mustard seed in the scripture. Mm. If you have faith as a mustard seed and you seek in that direction and you ask God to bless your life, I'm going to tell you, that mustard seed turned into an oak tree, that big tree. You know, that's my way I talk. I talk and people say, man, you're crazy.
You ain't crazy. Now you're preaching, Monty. I'm going to start calling you the right Reverend Doctor, Monty Alexander. The way you're talking right now. I got about 90 seconds here. We'll continue when we come forward. But in these 90 seconds, just run me a list of names of persons you regard as masters of your instrument.
Well, on top of that mountain, Art Tatum, Mr. Tatum from Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, yes.
Who, there you go, it had that gift that you can't explain. He sat at the piano from a young age and he just started whipping up those notes, coming up with these incredible harmonic inventions, all coming together, the timing, the rhythm. And if you knew about the piano, you just were astounded and said, this is one of the seven wonders of the world, this man, Art Tatum, you know?
Yeah.
However, he practiced crazy a lot. And he is filtered down into another pianist who played notes off of the piano, Mr. Oscar Peterson. So when Oscar played the notes, he ate and spit out the piano. He just, you know? And it was a combination of when his father said, because you're black, and you want to play the piano, you better be the best one, the best one. Mm. And that got down in Oscar's spirit, who is another West Indian, by the way, St. Kitts and I think Nevis, one of those islands. Mm-hmm. And Oscar went after that and he became a demon boogie-woogie piano player. And then he became more sophisticated. And then you have, as far as piano playing, even though it didn't have all that refinement, Duke Ellington himself, when he sat at the piano, he painted pictures from the very beginning.
Yes.
Talking about the late 20s and 30s. Duke, who, by the way, wrote a letter on my behalf so that the U.S. government would allow me to stay in America.
Hold that thought. I got to hear this story. I don't have time to do it right now. I want to hear the story of the letter that Duke Ellington wrote on behalf of Monty Alexander. I told you he had great stories, not just great music, but great stories. We're talking to, and I'm glad about it, the Jamaican jazz legend, Monty Alexander. His new album is called D-Day, and this is Tavis Smiley.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward. Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
Monty Alexander, you referenced this track Smile earlier in this conversation. That is, many have done it. Well, hold on. I want to hear more of this. Turn it up, Miles. Turn it up. Your turn at it, Monty, is beyond brilliant. I was about to say, many have done it, but I'm curious as to what your approach was when you decided to do Smile.
I think first of all, the first time I heard it was by one of our most beloved heroes of songs, Nat King Cole. I heard Nat sing Smile, and I knew about Charlie Chaplin, or one of the great comics, who he himself, like so many entertainers, suffer from feeling down, depressed, beaten by the challenges of life, yes. But guess what? They knew what smiling was. They knew what expressing yourself through your art, or, you know, creating a lyric for a song. And, okay, Charlie Chaplin came up with this song, Smile Though Your Heart Is Breaking, Smile Even Though It's Aching, you know, and those words, and you put it together, and it's a perfect sentiment, perfect. And when Nat put his gift on it, that's what grabbed me at one of my teenage years when I heard that song. And by the way, my parents had all Nat King Cole records. I mean, not just the trio in the beginning, and he was a great inspiration to a lot of the modern pianists when he played piano. But when he sang, and my mom and dad are dancing in the living room to Unforgettable or Mona Lisa. Mm. So Smile was one of those songs. So when I play Smile, I see Nat Cole standing in front of me in terms of this beautiful human being with that big smile and that the way he was so graceful. And I had the honor, by the way, of playing on Natalie's album, the popular Unforgettable album. I was there. And I could bring authenticity to the whole thing because I was there as a kid in terms of the music. So to answer your question, I don't know if I did, but
no, you did. You answered it and you gave me more, which is why I love talking to you. You never disappoint. All I can say is, Monty, you make me smile when you answer these questions, man. I'm delighted.
Back at you, Tavis. We're talking a similar philosophy. It's called seeking something called joy.
That's the goal. I'm trying to find joy, not just happiness. Happiness is fleeting. It comes and goes. What you want to find is joy in your work and witness.
Let me applaud you right now. And it's a daily quest. You seek it today and you forget it tomorrow. Every morning you get up, you say, thank you, Lord, for this day. And that's the beginning of the whole incredible thing called joy. And the next thing you know,
I was going to say that is wisdom speaking. That's why he begins his 80th campaign on June the 6th. But that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is wisdom speaking. All right. I didn't forget where we were in this conversation. You were about to tell me this great Duke Ellington story about him writing a letter on your behalf. Tell me the story, Monty.
Okay. I'll do the version of brevity. Well, I was Miami, Florida. I'm playing the piano at all these joints, these clubs, gangster-operated clubs. A lot of guys walking there carrying a .38 revolver. You know it. Mm-hmm. The hookers are there. The pimps are there. I'm playing the piano. I'm 18 years old. Some guy sees me playing. He wants to manage me. And I don't know about managers or booking agents. I said, okay. He turns out that he was the son of one of the owners of the Cotton Club in Harlem, where Duke Ellington and Jimmy Lunsford and the great musicians played. This was a club appealing that performed black artists, African Americans, but it was only catered to white audiences for the mm-hmm, most part. Mm-hmm. Black people were not welcome there. So anyhow, Duke sees. Let me cut back. We go to New York City. Steve himself, the son of Herman Stark, one of the owners or people involved with the Cotton Club, we go to New York seeking my fortune, let's put it. And he said, I want to take you somewhere. So we go up the Brill Building on Broadway to see Irving Mills. Irving Mills was the PR guy with Duke Ellington. And if you look at Duke's compositions, you see Irving Mills. Irving Mills, he probably didn't know a note of music. I don't know. But he was always, you know, in fact, he's part of Straighten Up and Fly Right, not Song. So Duke is sleeping on the couch, man. He's laying on the couch. And when Irving sees Steve, the young guy, he says, hey, Steve. He says, hey, Uncle Irving. How, you know, and they're talking like uncle and such. And then Duke wakes up from the nap and he says, hey, Steve. And Steve says, Uncle Duke. He says, what you up to? He says, I'm with this kid here. He's from Jamaica. And he said, he plays the piano pretty good. You should hear him play. And Duke said, hey, kid, play the piano. And I got to the piano. I was playing me some blues. I don't know, rocked a little bit. And one thing led to another. And the generous nature of this man, Mr. Edward Kennedy Ellington, somehow, I think, Steve expressed to him, we're in a little bit of a challenge right now because we're trying to get his visa to stay in the USA. And it needs a little sponsorship information from famous people such as you. And apparently Duke, I never saw the letter, but I got the proof that Duke wrote a little letter to the US immigration saying,
wow,
let this young man stay in America. He's talented. That, and not only was Duke, but there's a letter from Sinatra, there's a letter from Eddie Fisher, and there's a letter from Count Basie. Four letters went to immigration, and this is like 1964, 65, and that's a part of how I was allowed to stay in America. Well, and I'm still here, man.
I'm laughing, Monty, because if Duke Ellington and Frank Sinatra and Eddie Fisher, if those four letters to immigration can't get you a green card or can't get you a visa extended, if that can't get you citizenship, then I don't know what will. His name is Monty Alexander. The new album is called D-Day. I'm glad to have him on Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America.
Sounds different, huh? This is Tavis Smiley.
Monty Alexander, you are the king of difficult questions to answer, so let me throw another one your way. We were talking earlier about the fact that you really can't define joy per se, and my view is that one can't really define jazz. So let me ask the question this way: over the course of all these years that you've been doing so brilliantly what it is that you do, as only you can do it, how have you attempted to define jazz in your work?
Well, Tavis, I don't even think about it, you know.
Yeah.
I just do what gives me pleasure. I sit at the piano, and like you said, like a rainbow unfolds itself in front of me, and I just start giving myself joy by playing, and that's where the gift is, you know?
Yeah.
So I never got into trying to explain. As soon as I start to explain stuff, hey, I can tell stories all day long because they're true stories, but explaining why is not my specialty, and I just kind of give it up to... That's why I talk about the spirituality of it all, because you can't explain it. You know, even the scriptures say it's not what you see. You know what I mean? It's, you just have to believe it. And
that's
I believe
right.
so strongly that it's a gift. And I sit at the piano and I tell people who don't relate in that way, I say it's magic. And I have my heroes that inspired me. There's the word inspired. Inspired means the spirit within.
Mm.
And there are people, whether it was Muhammad Ali saying I'm the greatest, or it was my other great hero of the piano is Ahmad Jamal, by the way. This
yes.
man was gifted beyond compare. He brought drama to this music. He didn't just play technical. He made you sit there and what wonders of the world. And that's what I do when I play. I sense this same, you know, it's drama. People called me the Alfred Hitchcock of the piano. I said, what was that about? You know, and that's because I bring drama and I love to uplift people. They may come to the gig feeling down and not so happy. But by the time they walk out of there, unless they're total cynics, they're going to be smiling. They're going to feel good. They're going to be glad they came. So my thing is about this indefinable word that you and I struggle to explain, joy. And jazz is a word that we inherited that describes this wonderful celebration when musicians get together on a bandstand and they throw a note and the other guy throws a phrase and the drummer hits the snare and it all comes together like a wonderful celebration of what we're all about. And I think that's a high art form. I don't know if Beethoven and Brahms and those great guys tapped into that, but I can tell you that that's what Armstrong and Duke did, the forebears. And I see young people still coming up seeking that same possibility.
Yeah.
And somehow this little guy way down in Kingston, Jamaica, Monty, I got some of that stuff.
Oh, you got
and
more.
I'm glad I got it.
You got more than some of it. You are all the way tapped in. Our remaining moments with a Jamaican jazz legend, Monty Alexander, when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Seeking the truth. Speaking the truth. This is the Tavis Smiley Show. Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
I have enjoyed immensely, underscore the word immensely like 25 times. I've enjoyed immensely this dialogue with our friend and brother Monty Alexander, the Jamaican jazz legend. I was getting ready to share with you before I close this conversation with Monty, talking about his 80th birthday on June the 6th. I looked ahead on his schedule to see exactly where he's going to be performing on his actual birthday. I know the answer to that question now, but I was going to give you some dates of where you can catch Monty Alexander on tour this year. But some of these dates require a plane ride. You can go see him in a couple of days if you want to go to Japan. He's in Japan. He's in Puerto Rico. He's in Switzerland. I'm just looking at the list. Then he comes back home. He'll be in New York for some days in May. He will be in Seattle. He's going to San Francisco. He's at Blues Alley in D.C., then back to the U.K., then back to Paris, France, where he recorded this album. He's on the move, as Monty Alexander always is. But, Monty, I want to ask about what you're this 80th campaign on June 6th. The schedule says you're going to be at Jazz Alley in Seattle. I love that place.
Yeah, that's one of the top clubs. The guy who owns it is a longtime acquaintance who became a true disciple of the music. And I like to use the phrase, the real music, because yes, there's a lot of people use the word jazz, and it's kind of like a diluted version of what, you know, Lester Young and Charlie Parker and the Four Bears of this music. And the owner is one of the true cats, let's put it that way.
No.
So Jazz Alley is a good place. But look, for me, this sounds strange to say, but every day is my birthday. I never had a good New Year's Eve party because I used to, man, every time I go play the piano, that's the best party in the world. So every day I play is New Year's Day. New Year's Eve is birthday. So I don't have a way to equate my special birthday. Like, oh, on today, I'm going to have an extra rum and coke. No,
yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where I am. I'm talking to you right now, Tavis, that's a gift. That's a pleasure for me. So the pleasures are coming. I can't wait for the next boxing match when Ryan go back to the ring and take on Gervonta or whoever. That's my kick. That's my little kick. I know some guys are. Yeah, sports is very important to me, but don't matter where I am.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a bad piano, I'm going to try and make the bad piano sound good. If it's a good piano, I get a little extra happy. But, you know, I don't try to take myself. Don't take yourself too seriously. Take your gift seriously. But I see a lot of great musicians and they have taking themselves very seriously. And that doesn't help.
No.
Take your gift seriously, but find a way to laugh with life.
And there,
this is what...
No, again, it's wisdom speaking. I love that. I'm going to hold on to that for the next few days and just marinate on that thing. Don't take yourself too seriously, but do take your gift seriously. Monty Alexander has taken his gift seriously, man. Monty, I celebrate you, man. I love you. I appreciate you. Your energy, as I said, I can't find another word for infectious, but you have lifted my spirits today. I'll leave it at that. It's been a rough couple of days around here, but you have lifted my spirits in this conversation in ways that you don't even know. And that's what you do. You bring joy. There's that word joy again. You bring joy to those of us who love you and listen to you. You don't even know it, man. You just inspiring all of us.
I want to tell you, whenever I hear a nice little thing that helps us to see the bright side of life, guy once said, consider the donut, not the hole. Because if you keep looking at the hole, you ain't got nothing there. So the donut is something that you can put in your mouth and enjoy.
Yeah.
You know? So it's about looking for the positive in everything that seems negative. Like when you or me or one of our loved ones get criticized or put down or whatever, there is a good story there somewhere. Come out of that. It's like, you know, it's like Ali getting up from getting knocked down by Joe Frazier.
That's it.
You know, you get up and keep moving. And Ali, keep moving, by the way.
That's it. Keep moving. And Ali said it best. The ground is no place for a champion. He said that's why he got up, because the ground is no place for a champion. Monty Alexander is a champion in his own right with everything he does, but especially when he sits down to the piano. His new project is called D-Day, available wherever you get your records. You've heard some of it on this program. We played a little bit of it. It's an amazing project, and we love Monty Alexander. Monty, thank you, sir. I'm out of time. I got to run, but thank you. I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Boxwell, my brother, Boxwell.
Thank you, sir. Stay strong. Back here tomorrow, Lord willing, to do it all over again. Until then, as always, keep the faith.